time, weather, and...
Welcome to the Jay and Pav Podcast Experience.
You're listening to The Che and Pav Show, Teachers Talking Teaching.
Where two middle school teachers sharing our reflections, insights about the topics that matter the most in the classroom. So hey, Pav, join us in the hallway or even the parking lot, or better yet, how about the staff room?
Welcome to episode 111 of the Che and Pav Show. Thank you for joining us as we sit around the table to talk teaching. In today's episode, we sit down with spoken word artist, motivational speaker, and presenter, Dwayne Morgan. Before we talk to Dwayne, we will spend a moment just introducing ourselves. My name is Pav Wonder Woman Wander, and I make up half of this dynamic duo. My other half is sitting next to me, but I'll let him introduce himself.
Because I'm your first, your last, your everything.
Yes, you are.
I tried to keep a straight face for that. And that Barry White reference will hold all the more significant later in our interview with Dwayne.
I see. There's a little bit of a, I don't know, what is that? A little clue, a little hint.
A little hint of something that'll come up in the conversation that possibly reveals my age.
Oh.
Beyond the fact that I tell you that I'm 50.
Right.
Which also reveals my age.
But falsely.
Shh. Okay. Pav, we've had this conversation.
Yeah.
I'm 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 55, 60, and then I guess 70, 80, 90. Once you get that high up the scale, we just have these...
Decades. Just go by decades.
Yeah, that's right. So I will be 50 for a few years.
That's right. Yeah. Just like you were 45 for a few years.
That's right. At one point, it was great. Like, ooh, you're 45. You're that good at baseball. I was only 41. And then, ooh, you're 45.
As you round up.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Pav, it's looking forward to this interview.
Yes, very much so.
But also looking forward to being back on the mic. This is the longest gap.
Yes, it is.
We have had in recording or being live.
Ever.
Yeah.
Since we started. Yeah, absolutely. We have not gone this long. It actually felt really weird to sit down at the computer and turn on all of the equipment. I don't even know. I don't remember how everything works anymore. I was like, what is this? Where do these plugs go?
Please don't reveal that we were having troubles because I realized I hadn't plugged in the Rodecaster to the computer.
I never actually said that. You said it.
Your body language spoke volumes. Didn't need to be spoken.
Yeah. But yes, it has been a long time since we've recorded. It's been a few weeks, probably about 3 weeks since we've done any sort of recording or, you know, any live broadcast or anything, which is a long time for us. So we feel maybe a little bit out of practice, but it's for good reason. We were a little bit busy. We were not in town for a little while.
We've been really busy. And yeah. I think before we jump into this great interview is just to give thanks, acknowledgement, appreciation, and celebration for all the folks that have really helped us the last 3-4 weeks because they've been exceptionally busy, where, of course, we released the magnificent microphone, which we spoke about last episode, but it was like just out, like it'd been out 24 hours at the time. Now it's been out 3 weeks, and it's been a whirlwind 3 weeks just on that picture book. So well received in the educational community. We've been author talks where we were the guest authors with Zelia's class, brought us in as a surprise guest when she shared the book with her students. And then when they were done reading the story, we popped up in the Zoom. It was such a great moment. And of course, the book is gone number one and I think at 1.7 educational categories, but still holding on 3 weeks later. And you know what? Maybe it's just an Amazon category, but it's kind of fun to be able to say, you know what, for that one weekend, we were storming the charts.
Yes.
And we're still holding on with a spot in the charts. And it feels good. It's rewarding. It's validating. And this is why we start with thank you, because people going out of their way to see value in the story, buying it, one, to support us, but then also seeing the rich value in the story. Pav, we were really proud of the content.
Yeah.
And I think 3 weeks later, we're even more proud or validated that the content is really strong. It's not just a picture book. And I would go one step further. It's, you know, picture books about kindness are great.
Yes.
But it's more than just a kindness pick-me-up story. It's a real access point to the microphone, accessing student voice, creating that strong audio content, which we know is great as podcasters, but I think Dwayne Morgan would attest that the power of the mic is one that is really strong. And when we can curate our skills to be able to handle mic and audio recording, we can elevate and amplify our voice and student voice.
Absolutely. You know, something that has really struck me about the Magnificent Microphone is that there are so many different themes and avenues that can be explored with this book. And, you know, it's something that we didn't truly realize when we were actually writing, but it was something that came out afterwards when people were talking about how they've used the book. I think that's something that we were definitely thinking about when we wrote it, was the elevation of student voice, the elevation of even teacher voice, voice in general. Is sometimes people feel unheard, and it's really great to be validated. And we definitely had those feelings as well. But there are also other themes. You know, if you're starting up a podcasting unit or a unit where student voice and choice is front and center, this could be a great way to lead into that. And so that was something that was really interesting that was pointed out to us. And then another thing is the universality of so many different themes that people experience in this world. And it was pointed out that, you know, you can have a protagonist of color in a book and not have to speak about their color or their race or their ethnicity or whatever it is that makes them different from the other protagonists that have been in stories. But the fact that so many different ethnicities, cultures, races around the world experience many of the same things. That's a big theme. That's a big, really understanding that we can take from a picture book, that, you know, people can feel unheard in so many different scenarios. People can feel like their voices don't matter in so many different parts of the world. And I took that to be, you know, something that was really important to highlight, that we all experience many of the same things. And I think it's great to be able to put some protagonists of color into storybooks. And also talk about some of those universal themes that we all experience. So that was a big one for me as well.
And Pav, moving along, because you talked about teacher voice, and this is a great segue into another reason we've been so busy, and we haven't talked about it as much, but, you know, we took our talents to Saskatoon.
Yes, we did.
Not once, not twice, not, oh yeah, three times. we did our first ever live face-to-face keynote address.
Yes.
And it was exhilarating and nervous and nauseating all at the same time for all the right reasons.
Yep.
A really great adventure. And when you talked about teacher voice, it reminded me of that, because in our keynote, We positioned ourselves in where we are in education. And this is one of the reasons that we don't like the term I'm an educator, because it's too vague. And why do we say educator when I really need to know who you are and what you're doing to know what your experiences are that I can, I don't want to say validate, but I'll reverse the coin. Is that when I speak on education, I speak from a teacher perspective. I teach from a middle school teacher perspective. I do not teach for I do not speak for kindergarten teachers. I do not speak for grade three teachers. I do not speak for high school teachers because I don't know that experience. Mm-hmm. But when I use a comment like, oh, I'm an educator, it's almost like I empower myself to speak on all things education, but I don't have the expertise. I'm not a policymaker. I'm not in academia doing deep research. I mean, I have action research in my class, but predominantly my job is to teach. Mm-hmm. You're sort of in that frontline teaching role, and that is one of the critical pillars of education. But when we try to all pretend we're all doing the same thing, then we sort of lose poignant focus on what it is that we can do and where it is that we should be asking for help. I need my literacy coaches. I need my librarians. I need everyone in that system to provide something for me that allows me to do my job. And I hope that I provide something that allows them to do their job. And I think when you talked about teacher voice, Saskatoon and their organizers really liked us and wanted us, not because we're better than anyone, but we represented the teacher voice. Mm-hmm. And so the keynote address for day two was a professor that was talking on great content, but she's in the academia space doing research that provides back to teachers. And so I thought the Saskatoon Federation was so good at curating guests that touched upon all these critical pillars of education and didn't lean exclusively on one or the other. And so we were blessed by them that they wanted to honor teacher voice to kick off their IT summit. And it was a fantastic experience to talk about that. And we were really clear about that, like clear about this is our story, is the teacher story. And that's what they wanted. They wanted the teacher story to talk to teachers.
Absolutely. It was the Saskatchewan Federation of Teachers. And it was in Saskatoon, their digital IT summit. And it was a phenomenal experience. And you're absolutely right, Che, as you were talking about that, I was thinking to myself, when people label themselves as educators, and if they are teachers, I feel like it lessens the role of the teacher. It almost makes it feel like I don't want to identify myself as a teacher. And I think that you and I have worked really hard to not only label ourselves as teachers, but to label ourselves as just teachers. We aren't doing anything other than teaching. We put all of our energies into this very important frontline role, and we put all of ourselves into it. And there's nothing to hide about that. There's nothing wrong with that. It's everything to be highlighted, and the importance of that role should be highlighted. And so we had a real opportunity to do that as keynote, the opening keynote address at the Digital IT Summit for the Saskatchewan Federation of Teachers this past week. It was an incredible experience for us.
And Pav, our keynote was sort of rediscovering ourselves as teachers through the act of podcasting.
That's right.
The journey of self-discovery, self-actualization, the reflective teacher, active reflective teacher.
Yes, and it was very important for us to sort of speak on this journey that we've been on for the past 2.5 years and talk about how this experience has really changed us as teachers and made us better teachers, and how and why and what part of the professional learning that we've experienced was in part responsible for us being where we are. And so it was a great opportunity to just reflect on some of those learnings that we have had over the past couple of years, and then also talk to a room full of other teachers that were possibly on the same path or hopefully embarking on that path. So phenomenal experience, and I'm so happy. I wish I could go back and relive the entire thing all over again.
I've been replaying it ever since.
I know.
It's been great to connect with folks we had met via Twitter. Then it's also great to meet a whole bunch of folks that aren't in the Twitter space. And then it was really great to network some possible podcasting opportunities with schools in Saskatoon, in Saskatchewan, and some real nitty-gritty networking, not just to know you, but now that you've displayed a certain skill set, mm-hmm. I'd love to bring this into some schools in Saskatoon or in Saskatchewan. So we're really excited about the possibilities of being able to support. And of course, as you support, you're supported. And it's that collective growth. So we're really looking forward to every type of connection we made in that space, but really looking forward to being able to bring some of our podcast wisdoms to some schools in Saskatchewan.
Absolutely. Really well said.
I'd say we're ready for the interview, yeah. But we haven't done a podcast in 3 weeks, so I still got more good news.
Oh, let's keep going then.
You know, we haven't podcasted, but our school, yes. Our school had a landmark podcast experience. And I think I've talked about it briefly. Our school has gone all in on podcasting. So as much as we have this great studio here in the kitchen, my school, and I know your school is the same gear.
Yeah.
Went all in and purchased all top-of-the-line gear, curated a space, allowed me to have another room, designed it perfectly. So it's not just the podcast room, but it's also a very content creation room. So there's everything there. You can bring a full class into that space. And then we use that to also connect with Voice Ed Radio and Stephen Hurley. And he came in and he ran some great PD for our grade fives and up. And then we use that we would create the Beaumont Bears podcast. And we would broadcast it live to the community through Voicehead Radio. And we brought in our superintendent and our principal to interview with two of my class students leading the interview. And they talked about the power of podcasts, elevating student voice, how podcasts can play a role in anti-racist work within our board. Mm-hmm. And it was a powerful conversation, magnificently received by our superintendent, by our principal, by our community. And I know we had almost 150 live listeners for that show. And I think that's exactly what we wanted. We wanted another way to reach out to our community and another way for our community to look through the window and see what was going on. And it was a absolutely exhilarating experience. And I know the class was really felt good about knowing they had brought something to the school that had never been brought before.
Yeah.
A podcast, a live radio show, SO, our superintendent in the space, the principal in the space, connecting with the community. It was such an uplifting moment, which reminds me, Pat, before we get to this great interview, is why it's so important to invest in your schools and the resources before you expect students to deliver. Because what's made this podcast experience go so well is the school didn't wait for students to create podcasts on their own before they said, we will change the system. We will invest the money. We will curate a classroom. And then when we build it, it will come. Mm-hmm. And I think too often we expect individuals to do great work first, and then maybe the system will respond to it.
Yeah.
But I think this is the why so many systemic inequalities still exist, because we're always waiting for people to do something first in order to justify a change. But perhaps we should be taking on change within the system first, knowing that people will then use the changes within the system to do great deeds.
Yeah, and that's such a great point, because we have to be able to create spaces where we enable students to succeed. And I think that is essential. And you've done that in a phenomenal way with your school, and I'm following suit. Just a couple of steps behind you, we have many of the same workshops coming, all of the same equipment, the same kind of space that has been set up. And we've been working hard as well as getting our podcast off the ground, and it's been great to use your students sort of as our mentors in this space, and sort of follow along with what you guys have been doing. And it's been great to be able to build upon that and try a few things that are different and work towards our own launch before the end of the school year. I know that it is something that the students have really been looking forward to, and I think that it really is that, you know, being able to walk into a space and seeing all of the equipment and saying, hey, this is here and it's ready for me and it's here for me to use, and I can create something great with this. And it's not, you know, me saying as a student, I have to prove myself to you as a teacher or as a school or as administrators to be able to get some great stuff in here. It's the other way around. Here's all of the great stuff. Now let's see what you can do with it. And I think that's a phenomenal way to really get some creativity flowing in the school environment.
Pav, never lagging behind, because you're my first, my last, my everything.
I like that.
Yeah, I thought you would. Now, that seems a little bit more appropriate.
Yes.
Than to anoint myself these things. Let's talk a little bit About Dwayne.
Yes.
this conversation, this interview is really great. Poignant, spoken word, artistry. Dwayne telling his experiences as a student, what he sees as sort of an artist, not necessarily solely fixated on the education system, but his ability to do great deeds, great work, great artistic creations sort of on the periphery of education, and then draw it back into education as a powerful role model to come into schools, but also to speak brilliantly on what's going on in schools and where he sees his work can be impactful. Pav, I'll share a little story on this one, which will come up in this interview, is that I met Dwayne very early on in my career when I was young and ambitious and I don't want to say craving power, but my idea of what my role in education was different than it is now. And he was one of those folks that when I saw, I was truly inspired and sort of said, I would love to mirror or follow suit in the way he spoke to a group of children. Didn't have to command the audience. The audience wanted to be a part of every word. They were connected to every word. And I remember him coming to my classroom because Miss Jackson brought him down to chat a little bit more. I think she saw that I could learn a little from his guidance, from his words on a more one-to-one ratio. I remember buying the CD, two CDs actually, and then 20 years later, in a space where I felt, Pav, you know, we had this conversation, we should reach out to Dwayne Morgan. Like we know him, we're friends. Well, I know him. And you know, we've also seen him virtually through the TVSB presentations. But it really feels like a coming of full circle. Still an ascending circle, but a full circle that maybe I've grown enough, matured enough, am doing good enough work that I could revisit and have another powerful conversation that I know will continue and further to ignite my flame. So on that personal journey, that self-actualization, really important for me to reconnect with someone that I met very early on in my teaching career.
Yeah, and I love that story. I love when you shared it with Dwayne. I think it was such a great connection point between the two of you. I only know Dwayne through the workshops that he has done through the TDSB as well. And so that was a really important. It's really great for me to learn about who he was on a more personal level. And I often feel like we are just so privileged because we get to do that. We get to talk to all of these people that we admire so much and people who have presented for us, for our classes, and we get to sit in and learn from these people in a more personal conversation. So just a little bit about Dwayne before we get into the conversation. Dwayne is a two-time Canadian National Poetry Slam champion, and he started his career as a spoken word artist in 1993. So he's been doing this for quite some time and he is very seasoned at it. And he founded the Up From the Roots Entertainment Foundation in 1994 to promote artistic contributions of African Canadians and urban influenced artists. And it's only gone uphill from there. When we say that Dwayne Morgan is an incredibly accomplished individual, that is an understatement. He has done so much and he's worked with so many people and his resume just goes on and on and on and on forever. And he is absolutely one of the most charismatic people that you will ever listen to in a live presentation. And the conversation that we had with Dwayne as well is extremely engaging. And I found myself just sitting and saying to myself, I just want to keep talking to him because he's got so many great gems that he's providing us in this conversation. But also, I'm really just liking hearing what he has to say on a more one-to-one basis. So it was a really great conversation. And I think that to listen back to it is also going to be a really engaging piece as well for us.
Perfectly stated. We'll be right back with our interview with Dwayne Morgan. And you're listening to The Chay and Pav Show. And we are here with the mighty Dwayne Morgan on the Che and Pav Show. And we are really excited to have Dwayne talking with us today to talk spoken word, to talk poetry, to talk the arts. But that is just a small smidgen of all the things that Dwayne is bringing into the educational space, the space of artistry, the space in general here in Toronto and the community. So, Dwayne, I don't need to talk too much. We'd really love for you to share with our audience a little bit about, one, who you are and your connection to spoken word and how your journey through spoken word has manifested this great career that is still on the ascension. Please introduce yourself to our audience.
All right. Well, first, thank you so much for inviting me to be here and giving me this opportunity to share. My name is Dwayne Morgan. I'm a spoken word artist. I have been doing that ever since I was in high school. It's been 29 years now that this has been my career. I've spent the last 25 of those working with school boards, throughout Ontario. And, for me, it's really just been a matter of trying to bring a new lens into classrooms, into schools, trying to inspire young people who, kind of grow up like me to understand that there are other paths that you can take that are viable if you're willing to, put yourself out there and do the work. And it's just really been amazing to see, all of the things that I've done, all of the people that I've met, how many young people I've met who are now teachers and remember when I came into their school when they were students, and all these intersections of lives, and just to be able to have that kind of impact on a human life is the greatest joy for me.
That's amazing, Dwayne. And 29 years. Wow. That's such a, I'm sure that it feels like it went by so fast, but it's a huge amount of time, and the amount of impact that you have had, as you mentioned, teachers who were students when they first interacted with you, that's such a wonderful and rewarding experience. I'm sure that you encountered a few obstacles along the way, and you spoke a little bit about that in your introduction about yourself, kids who grew up like me. Tell us a little bit about what maybe some of those obstacles were, or what you mean when you say students who grew up like me, or things that you had to overcome, as a spoken word artist, or even just as an artist growing up. And what advice would you share with students who may be encountering some of those similar obstacles along the way?
Well, there's definitely a couple of things. When I speak about, kids who are growing up like me, a lot of times, when you grow up with parents who are immigrants, there's a set idea of what you can do with your life and a set path of what are the acceptable jobs and occupations and careers that you can go into. And being an artist isn't one of those things. So, when young people, see me and see that I'm passionate and see that I'm living a life simply based on my art, I think it's a great thing for them to realize, oh, here's this other possibility. When they learn that I started my own business when I was in high school, it's like, whoa, here's another possibility of something that I can do. So, those are some of the things that I really want young people to see, when they see me in their classroom or on stage, do an assembly at their school. The other part that most people don't know is that I'm actually a shy, quiet introvert who does not like speaking to or in front of people. So the fact that my job has been to speak to and in front of people for 29 years is a hurdle that even to this day, I still have to overcome on a daily basis and figure out, all right, how do I do this thing? How do I get the energy? How do I psych myself up to go into the school and to deliver what people want from me, even when it is outside of my comfort zone?
Oh, Dwayne, that's a great answer. I can connect. I'm having empathy. And I have a little anecdotal story, as you talked about former students or students that had seen you perform that reconnect with you. And as I was telling Pavs that I know Dwayne Morgan. He doesn't know me, but I know him. And early on in my teaching days, you came and you spoke at our school because our principal, Miss Jackson, was adamant that you had to come and speak in front of our staff or in front of our students, and then gifted me the opportunity to meet you one-on-one afterwards. And, it went through your CD, and I remember purchasing your CD back then, and it was like the impact. And when you talked about those little impacts, I think sometimes as a performer, or I assume, because I'm not a performer, you interact with so many people. Sometimes you get to directly see the impacts you make. And then other times you don't realize the impacts you mm-hmm. make years and years without any sort of interaction. And I always know that when you came to our school, it changed the way I wanted to teach. It changed the way I looked at my students. I saw something that maybe I was naively missing. And your name and your content, I always referred back to. I always drew students to. And so I've had one of those moments where you've come in, you've made that impact. And so I want to thank you just on a personal level for making me a better, a more responsive teacher and more connected to my community. Which sort of leads me to my next question, which is, when you were a student, how did the school experience validate and honor that creative spirit? And maybe did it support, or how did being an introvert play into that? I love the fact you made that comment on a point on an introvert, because I've always sort of self-identified as a high functioning introvert, that you put a lot of pressure or you coach yourself to be sort of this stage performer. As you were talking, I jotted down the note stage. As a teacher, people always say I'm exceptionally flamboyant, and they make the assertion that you must be an extrovert. But I've always said I'm actually quite uncomfortable, and I can go weeks without talking to people, but not when I'm teaching. And I think this would be a great thing to maybe expand upon, is how do you sort of put yourself in that stage, that mindset? So sort of two-pronged questions there. How did your school experience validate? And I hope it validated your experience and didn't make you sort of feel like it wasn't worthy. And if it wasn't, please share a little bit about that. And then maybe that extension, a little bit about, you know, that introvertedness, or sort of prepping yourself on a stage, or sort of acknowledging that sometimes we have to tap into character traits that aren't necessarily our inherent strengths, but we work diligently to make something that is our perceived weakness or our feeling of weakness and make it one of our greatest strengths.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, you know, in school, I didn't really find the arts, and I didn't find poetry and spoken word until my final year of high school. And back then we had grade 13, so we were there for the long haul of the 5 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, prior to that, I had never written anything. I didn't have a journal. I wasn't one of those kids who, you know, had always been secretly writing in a notebook. Like, I was the president of our Black students group, and we hardly had any Black students in our high school. And we were putting on a talent show, and I realized that all these people were coming to watch this talent show and see my friends, and they were singers and rappers and dancers, and nobody really cares about who organizes the show. And I was like, well, this really sucks, because all of my friends are going to be in the spotlight and I'm not. So then I have to ask myself, well, how do you get into the spotlight in a talent show when you have no talent? So I was like, well, if I can't sing, I can't dance, I can't rap, so why don't I try to write a poem? That's probably the easiest thing to do to get into the talent show. And I wrote a poem. It was the first poem I really ever wrote, and that poem changed my life. So, you know, that's really the story in terms of high school. You know, prior to that, you know, there wasn't really, you know, anything, any class that really, you know, sparked this artistic interest in me. I definitely did have you know, two teachers that I can think of who really saw something in me and, you know, kind of pushed me. I don't think they knew where they were pushing me to, but they just kind of saw that something was there. And, you know, looking back, it'd be like, yeah, you know what? These teachers kind of saw something and they pushed me. So definitely there was that element while I was in school. In terms of, you know, the other piece of, you know, overcoming being an introvert and being shy and being quiet and that being my comfort zone, I realized that, you know, a lot of the stuff that would be holding me back or stopping me from doing certain things was really caught up in my ego, in terms of everyone's going to be looking at me. What are they going to be thinking? Is it going to sound okay? And all of this kind of stuff. And when you really break it down, it's a lot of me, 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 me. And what I ended up having to do is to realize that when I go into a school, I am simply a vessel. Mm-hmm. I am the connection between some ideas and these young people and maybe some of the staff. And now it's no longer about me, me, me. It's about them, them, them. And when the focus is on them, it just happens. It's on autopilot. I don't even have to think about it. I just do it because it's not about me anymore. So I think the key to the success that I've had, especially as an introvert, is being able to get out of my own ego and to really focus in on what are the messages that I am the bridge between, and how do I make sure that I deliver these messages to these young people in the best possible way so that they can accept it and digest it?
I gotta say, Dwayne, that's such a great message. And I love that connection that you made about being the vessel. You know, Che talked about he himself being a high functioning introvert. I would not say that I'm an introvert, but I am incredibly shy. And so I relate so much to what you were talking about of just being such a quiet person and hating to speak in front of people and speaking up and, you know, that whole idea of everybody is looking at me and I don't want that kind of attention. But you turned it into something different, to think about it in a different way. It's not about me and who is looking at me. It's about the content that's being delivered to everyone that is listening, and it's about the message and how is that message landing on students who may really need to hear that, and staff, as you mentioned, because I am somebody who that definitely connects with. You know, taking it away from actually being about myself and being about the message. And I think that it's the fact that you have been able to present that message that has made you so impactful over the last 29 years. And I think that that is something that people really connect with. I think that is something that people find relevance in. And so I think that that's such an impactful thing and an impactful message that you have brought to us today. So thank you for saying that. I really connected a lot with that. And I also want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about the immigrant experience. I really relate to this as well, being a first generation Canadian. My parents emigrated here in the 70s, and it was very much the same thing. It was very much my parents not understanding that there are multiple avenues and multiple ways of exploring who we are. And I felt like, you know, being here around that time, growing up in the 80s, it was very much about, you know, manifesting the futures that our parents had planned out for us already, coming here to Canada, and us wanting to actualize those dreams that they had for us. And, you know, thinking about all of the sacrifices that they had made to set up these homes for us in a new country. And I think that the guilt that students have when growing up as immigrants really plays a huge part. And I think that sometimes it takes a lot to sort of see ourselves as something other than what our parents want us to be or what our family members want us to be. And so I think that having exposure to people who have found success in those areas is so very important. And this is leading us into our next question. I just felt that it was such an important point to make that that now in school today, we're finding these cuts to the arts programs, and it's really impacting that exposure to the arts and seeing where the arts can really take us. And so I think it's really important, and I'm sure that you would agree, to instill the arts as much as we can. But how do teachers do that when we're experiencing so many cuts to the program? And this isn't just, you know, spoken word poetry. This is not poetry just in general. This is filmmaking, music production, writing, illustrating, all industries that are so huge in society right now and are doing such amazing things when it comes to content creation. How do we instill more of this when the arts are continually being cut from so many learning spaces?
I mean, I think that's such a great question, because that is so, you know, relevant to the reality of right now and the pressures that a lot of teachers are dealing with. Because, you know, we just had, well, we're still kind of in the trail ends, I guess, maybe, of this pandemic, and, you know, schools and everything were shut down. And we have this thing where whenever things get cut, it's the arts that always get cut first. But when everything shut down, everyone turned to the arts. Mm-hmm. Everyone turned to music, They turn to Netflix. They turn to, you know, binge watching, all of these kinds of things. What would the world have been, and how would that pandemic have been without art, without artists, without creators? So it is such a disservice that we are doing to young people by cutting this form of expression. You know, when 100 years from now, they're not really going to care what the politicians had to say. They're going to look at, what was the art that was created? Mm-hmm. What were the sculptures? What were the monuments? What were the poems that were being written? When we look back at societies, we look at what was the art that was created. We're still learning about Shakespeare, and that stuff was however long ago. So it is such a disservice to not prioritize the arts, especially when we know that there are so many young people who thrive on the arts. There are so many young people who learn through the arts and don't learn in this traditional way that we like to try to teach. And speaking specifically about, you know, Black students, Indigenous students who, you know, fail and are pushed out of the school system more than any other groups of young people. And this is because there's a disconnect for them between the traditional idea of learning and the arts, that, and they are ingrained in the arts. They understand the world through the arts, through stories, through dance. So we often look at these kids and we're like, wow, they're so talented. They're so creative. Yeah. And then what? They come to school mm-hmm. for 8 hours and none of that is nurtured. All of that is killed and it dies in them because there's no outlet. So I think we really have to look at some creative approaches to how we integrate the art into the things that we were doing. You know, years ago, I was part of a program through the Royal Conservatory of Music called Learning Through the Arts. And they would have artists work with the curriculum to see how we can interpret the curriculum in such a way that we can get artists into classrooms doing non-traditional things. So, you know, when you look at dance and when you look at music, there's a lot of math in music and a lot of math in dance. You got to count the number of steps and all these kinds of things. So people were able to break that down, and a dancer could go into a classroom and teach math and get kids both dancing and understanding concepts of math at the same time. So I think we really have to look for creative ways for how we integrate the arts into the curriculum.
Oh, Dwayne, that was a great answer. As you were speaking, it reminded me of when you're making those cross-curricular connections, where how many students are made to feel that they're not a math student when they've already displayed mastery of math through other forms, and yet the system alienates often racialized students by just making them feel that they can't display their math through colonial measures of success. And so we invalidate or unvalidate the mastery of the arts because it's founded in all this high-end learning that doesn't get validated. So I'm really glad you brought that point up. I loved your statement about when we look back on the world, we look back at the arts to sort of gauge and make assertions about what our society was like. I never sort of rationalize it that way. So I put those notes and underlined it a few times because I'm using this in my class next week. How we often draw upon the arts to try to make these connections of what was going on in communities, in societies. And I said, I can actually relate. Whenever I try to justify why I love Barry White and disco music, I make this was reflective of the times of the late 70s. And this is why Barry White was a proud disco musician, where sort of over time, sometimes it's trivialized. And I know this example is kind of a trivial one, but that's how I made a connection to what you were saying. I said, that's right. So I really love that line. Mm-hmm. To jump a little bit, you visit a lot of schools, you go to a lot of schools, and there's a lot of different stakeholders in these spaces. You go to schools and you're hoping that a certain message lands and resonates, but you're never totally sure how a student takes in what you say, because you say so many brilliant things. You never know what singular line, what singular word is the one that's going to be a seed that grows with a student. So when you do present with schools, what is it that you're hoping to instill? And I know you talked a little bit about this earlier with students, and what type of engagement, or how does it, do you see it landing with students to sort of keep propelling you and keep guiding you in doing this really important work?
I mean, great question. And I think one of the things that I had to learn is to not hope. Because, you know, when I hope for a certain outcome, I set up an expectation, and then it's an expectation that I never know if I'm going to find out the answer to. So then it then just sets me on this wild goose chase of like not knowing, did I have any kind of impact? Yes or no. So, you know, there's a lot of different layers to, you know, what people will experience when I go to speak. One, here is this black male on stage. This is not something that a lot of people see all that often. We're starting to get a lot more black males in the school system, but, you know, for a lot of young people to look up and the person at the center of what's happening is, you know, a black male who's up there with a baseball cap and baggy jeans and, you know, has the respect of the administration and all that kind of stuff. That does something to young people, to their perception of themselves, of to their perception of people who look like me. So, you know, just me being there is one part of it. The next part is, you know, I'm talking to these young people in their language. You know, I'm using references that they get, right? So I'm not going in there talking about, you know, well, just to you know, pick on stuff a bit. I'm not talking about Barry White, but I'm going to go there and I'm going to talk about Kendrick Lamar. I'm going to talk about J. Cole. I'm going to use Cardi B as, you know, examples that I'm pulling from and showing how the stuff that I'm saying relates to these people. And they're like, oh, yo, I never even saw it that way. I didn't, you know what I mean? So when they, when it's broken down in their language, then that's another layer of what they can get. And none of this even has anything to do with the real content of what I'm speaking yet. This is just, you know, atmospheric kind of, you know, stuff that they get from me being in the environment. And, you know, people who've, you know, seen me go into schools, I don't go in, you know, with a script or a prepared speech. I kind of know in my head, like, point forms where I want to go. And I just say things that will get me to the next point. So, you know, I just have like these 7 points in my head and I'm like, okay, what do I have to say to get from here to here in a way that makes sense? And I just go and I just, I'm just in it in the moment. And I, you know, so every time I do it, it's different. At every school, something might change, something might happen, and I can use what just happened, you know, with the students and incorporate it into what I'm saying because I'm not so tied to a script that I can't be in the moment. So, you know, if somebody starts to laugh or makes a joke or somebody trips or something, I can use it because what I'm doing is so free that it allows me to be present in that moment. And I think, you know, when young people also see that this guy's not just coming here and just saying the same old script that he says every day. He's actually present and he's actually, you know, calling on things that are happening in the room right now. It's just another anchor that allows them to hook on to what it is that I'm trying to say. And I always say to them, you know, the greatest gift is that one thing that I say lives on with you because there's no guarantee that I will ever see y'all in any way ever again. So the greatest joy for me in being here is that one thing that I said will stick with you, but I'm going to say a whole lot of things and all I need is one of them to stick.
That's incredible. I love that. I wrote down three words as you were speaking. I wrote down responsive, resonate, and reflective, and some great R words there. But, you know, I thought to myself, I love how responsive you're able to get with students. And I've seen this firsthand myself through being in presentations with you. You're really able to tap into what the students understand and what they're aware of and what their knowledge base is. And that's so important to get them on board with you. It's so important to get their attention and to get them engaged in what you have to say to them. And so that's a brilliant first step to getting students in. And then that one piece that you mentioned, I just want students to be able to take away one thing that they heard me say or something that they connected with. And so that piece about resonation or being able to resonate with the students that are there, something that they can carry with them as the as one thing. It may not even have been your main message or your main point, but one of the seven things that you were able to tie in. That's incredible. And then, of course, being reflective of to the community that you're in and understanding that, you know, this group may need something a little bit different. That's you know, the group that I'm going to be seeing next week, and understanding that they are still going to be able to respect who you are and the message that you have, despite, you know, the way that you appear to them, or to anybody else, or what their expectations might be of who you are, who a presenter is supposed to be. So, I just wanted to touch on that really quickly and say that's such a wonderful thing to be able to go into a place. And as you were saying, you know, you go in and you've got these seven things that you want to tie together to make this one conversational piece happen with the students. I'm thinking to myself, that's amazing. I know that Che does this really well too. He knows what he's got to say, and then he can turn it into a really wonderful talking point with all of the students. For myself, I require a lot more planning for that, and so that's not really my jam. But I really admire and respect when people are able to really do that. And it always makes me think that there must be so much foundational knowledge that is there for you to be able to tap into to make all of those connections in real time. And so what I'm really curious about is, what is that process like to prepare for all of your incredible content? I mean, you're not just doing spoken word and speeches and motivational conversations with students. You're writing books, you've made films and music. You're really a huge knowledge base. And I'm really curious to know how you turn all of that foundational knowledge into such organic and flowing content that we all as observers are able to see.
Great question. I think there's two things. And so going back to the first part, you know, sometimes I go into schools and I'm in there to do, you know, a workshop, maybe just to get kids to write or something like that. And you always have the teachers who want to warn me about which students are the troublemakers and that sort of thing. And I always tell them it's okay. Don't tell me. I don't want to know. Because, you know, we have this thing where that, you know, reputation just follows these kids forever, you know, and I don't care. It doesn't matter to me, because usually it's that child that you think is going to be the troublemaker that does the best in my workshop, that has so much stuff going on that maybe makes them a troublemaker, that you have no idea what is the stuff that this kid is going through. And through my workshop, they get the chance to express it. It's the first time there's someone there who really wants to listen to them and, you know, really empower them to say, hey, your story matters, you matter, your life matters. And it's not just, here's a label that we're going to put on you, but here's an opportunity for you to say who you are, and we're just going to sit back and listen. So I try to facilitate a lot of those experiences for young people and allow them to live beyond the label that is often placed on them. The other piece to that is, you know, I try to stay as present as possible every single day, whether I'm in a school or not, because I understand that the things that I have to learn about life comes from being present. So, you know, when I go into schools and I see these young people, when I even see, you know, my own daughter, and it's just spending hours upon hours staring at a screen while nature is around you, life is around you. Like, people take, you know, young people are looking at their phones and thinking that life is on their phone without realizing that people are taking moments from life and then putting it on the phone. So if you really want to live life, you got to put your phone away and live life and create some things that you can then post on your phone. So, you know, for me, it's really about trying to be present, trying to figure out, what is the story here? How can I take this experience that I'm having and turn it into something that people who aren't having this experience can still gain something from? So I really try to tap into the spiritualness of us as human beings, the human nature of us. And so that doesn't mean it disregards, you know, gender and race and all of these kinds of things. But I believe that there is just something innately human and spiritual about us that I really try to connect to. And I think that that's where the real beauty of what I do and how I connect to people really shines.
Dwayne, thank you for that answer. Your last part, you humanize everything. And I love how you talk about the phone. Mm-hmm. You know, the phone's not necessarily something to ignore. There's valuable space in there. But when you think about what is the content you're going to create, what are the wisdoms you're going to share? Well, you've got to live life in order to have something to share. And if you get caught consuming, mm-hmm. you miss chances to build your own life and share that life. How do we humanize life? Well, we're able to connect with each other's stories. But if you're solely just consuming someone else's story, then you almost become dehumanized a little bit. I really love that you're talking about that. I'm going to come back to Barry White because in that comment, it reminded me of my own growth. And I think it will remind us to our listeners. And it taps into some learning I did from Pav, and I had an interview recently with Rukia Muhammad, and she really stressed you need to position yourself and be very open about your position. And it taught me to remind myself, I'm a white male. I can be very over the top as an educator, but I'm also teaching in a completely racialized community. And how much of my personality erases other people's ability to share their stories, or how much of my lived experiences denies students to make connections. And as a teacher, I would say one of the areas of greatest concern for my growth is decentering my personalities, decentering the connections I make. So when you commented that the Barry White's not relevant to students, that's a great reminder. As a teacher, we often make out connections that are really closely associated with us. But you know, when you think about the demographics of teaching, it is predominantly white. And when you're in the mm-hmm. Toronto communities, your students aren't predominantly white. And certainly I've learned a lot as a teacher to know my position, to know that I'm a white male in a completely racialized community. And really simple off the cuff remarks can really alienate and disconnect and turn students off. And I loved how you brought that back to, you don't want to know the reputation of a student. And I could connect to, they always say, oh, make sure you read the OSRs. I don't want to read the OSRs. I don't want to be told what six other people have probably already validated some general conclusions about students. And then it changes my position. And I want to be mm-hmm. positioned that I'm open and that I'm aware, and I'm aware of my biases. And so I think just your conversations, and although sort of tongue-in-cheek, Barry White, it just is a great reminder to know your positionality. What biases are you bringing in? And when you make a sort of off-the-cuff remark about a certain artist, per se, what is it really saying? What is it really erasing? So thank you so much for highlighting that and being such a great reminder. You're up to so many things. We'd love to know a little bit more about what you're up to. But I would also, it's a question, when you think of, you have so many access points. Let's say I'm introducing you to the students, and you weren't necessarily coming in for a workshop. If you had some content that you would say, please visit this book, or please listen to this spoken word, or please go to this album, where would you draw people to? And not necessarily you consider it your best work, but if you wanted people to get a sample of what Dwayne Morgan is, where would you say, hey, I would love if you tried this, if you listened to that, if you could think of three places, three songs, three places that you're creating content, where would you draw people to? Or maybe just one. And then let us know about what's coming up next, and maybe drop some handles and some socials for where folks can find you. But of course, Pav and I will include all this detailed information in the show notes that you can go and click and find exactly where Dwayne Morgan is and all the great things he is doing.
All right, so that is pretty loaded, and I'm going to see if I remember all that. But I definitely wanted to touch on the what you were saying before, because you know, when you talk about so many of the teachers, you know, being white and this sort of thing, you know, we also have to think about well, how does that, you know, so for a lot of young people, you know, their idea of, you know, who is authority, who is in power, who is the people we're supposed to respect, comes from the teachers that they see. And when the teachers never look like them, it sets up a dynamic that, you know, we often don't think about. And, you know, from the 70s, they've been doing all this research and being able to say, hey, there's a connection between who's at the front of the class and how, you know, racialized students fare in these classes. And one of the things we don't talk about is, if that is true, then what advantages have white students had forever? over mm-hmm. other racialized students. Because, you know, when I went to York University, it was the first time I ever had a Black teacher stand in front of me. And I busted my butt to do well in that class because somehow I felt like her job depended on my marks. And it was just this something of seeing somebody standing at the front of the class who looked like me. But if you ask, you know, white students, when's the last time you had a white teacher? They'll look at you like it's a trick question. Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's just a given. I have white teachers. What are you talking about? Like, when don't I have a white teacher?
Right.
So we often forget that who's at the front of the room also has huge ramifications, not just for in the classroom, but how we see ourselves in society and all of these, you know, kinds of things. To the piece about, you know, if I wanted to introduce people to who I am, I think my book, Everyday Excellence, is probably the best introduction to me. And it's hard to believe now it's been 9 years since I put that book out. But there's actually some schools in the Durham School Board that teach it in grade 11. And, you know, it's just a very motivational book for young people. And it's a very easy read. And it's funny because, you know, this teacher who did a lot of, she read the book and she's just like, oh, I have to teach this. And she just spearheaded it, went to the board, said, hey, we have to get this book on the list also, and just made it happen. And I was like, yo, you're the bomb, you know, so grateful. So every year, you know, when she teaches the book, her and I always set a date for me to just show up in the class. And, you know, I'll just roll up in the class one day and be like, yo, I heard you guys are reading my book, and just talk to the students about this book and answer any questions that they might have. And, you know, at the end of the year, she always makes them write these reflections. And you'll always have these kids saying, I absolutely hate reading, but I loved this book. Mm-hmm. Or they'll say stuff like, you know, there's so much negativity in the world that to come to school and be asked to read something positive, like, is so refreshing. So I think that book, Everyday Excellence, is definitely the book that is the greatest introduction to who I am as a person and how I see the world and what I want to give and get people to, you know, understand from me and my life experience. In terms of where people could find me, you know, my website, DwayneMorgan.ca, Instagram, Dwayne_Morgan, Twitter, Dwayne_Morgan. You could find me on, you know, Spotify, YouTube, whatever. Just, you know, put my name in Google and stuff just pops up. So I'm all over the place.
Amazing. And we've been putting your name and things, all kinds of stuff has been popping up for us too. We've been, you know, integrating so much of your work into our classes as well. And always tuning into the presentations. You know, another thing that the pandemic has brought us is a lot more web ready or, you know, virtual access to so many of these great presentations. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we never miss an opportunity to tap in to those opportunities as well. So thank you so much, Dwayne, for being here with us and talking to us about so many incredible things about your content and how you are really impacting students and being able to help teachers along the way as well. So I know that our audience is really going to benefit from this conversation. And I myself have learned a lot and made so many great connections through this conversation. And I know that Che has as well. So we just really wanted to say thank you for spending some time with us today and having this conversation with us. So thank you so much, Dwayne.
No problem. Totally a pleasure. And yeah, thanks again for the invite.
Dwayne, thank you. And now my journey's come full circle from when that day we met. And you spoke earlier about how you never know some people you'll never see again. I am so thankful to reconnect with you 18 years later. Thank you so much for gifting us your time and your wisdoms.
My pleasure.
More times, I wish that we could go back. Back to when music wasn't just that. Back to when we rep for the people. Spoke directly to the hood. When we put our dreams on wax. That was back when this thing was good. More times, I wish that we could do this for free. Because money plus art usually erases the artistry. Apparently, creativity isn't what sells. So we appease the masses by sounding like everyone else. More times, I wish men remembered a woman's worth and didn't sell them like slaves through these verses. These words are power and affect how people walk through life. So we have to take more care with these lyrics that we write. More times, I wish that I had more time to reason with the mandem about this music. Big things and small, but the system kicks us around like balls. So when we can, we do what we can do. When we reminisce over you, more time, more time, more time, more time, more time, more time.
You're listening to The Chain Pav Show.
Was that not a great interview, Pav?
It was incredible. It was so good. I just enjoyed it so much that day, and I enjoyed it so much listening back to it now.
I remember as the interview was going on, and usually we'll have our little side text to say, oh, why don't we redirect here? Not redirect's the wrong word, but let's comment on this. Oh, we need another question here. Let's talk about that. And I remember our text were, this is so good.
Yeah, this is so good.
This is so good. That's the only thing I could write on a text. There was no need to say anything else. And it was a fantastic interview, really empowering. Reminded me, it's a little bit of validation too, because Pav, you know, we have really restructured a lot of our teaching to honor spoken word, honor oral communication. We talk a little bit about podcasting, but we also have very rich and vibrant spoken word poetry units that we've had Patrick Walters in, and they've been associated many times. Patrick Walters has performed in a few of Dwayne Morgan's events.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know there's that powerful connection there. And so I think it's validating and a reminder to keep going on with this work in our spaces, because yes, there's such power in the spoken word and in poetry. One thing I loved about Dwayne's journey was he didn't necessarily see it from an early age. And I thought this was important, Pav, because I think so often we push, we expect for students to know their journey, to know their path so early on. And then conversely, I think the older I get, the better I used to be when I was younger, as Earl Weaver would say. We come back that when we're accomplished in a certain place, we create a linear narrative to make it look like this is the path we were on from a very early age. But Dwayne doesn't attest to that when you go through his story. It wasn't, oh, I was born to be a poet all the time. Maybe he was born to be a poet, mm-hmm, but it didn't manifest necessarily early on. It came on a little later. And I make that personal connection because I was a late bloomer, per se. Mm-hmm. Pav, you know I'm sort of an avid reader. I'm an avid learner, but I was not an avid learner early on. It really took me a little bit longer in my journey to actually find a zest and a flame for learning. And it's a little different than poetry, but I can connect on that idea of being a late bloomer and sort of being overlooked early on. And it's a very realistic story to know, you know what? You might not necessarily know where you want to go when you're six. And this ties into a lot of things we talk about, Pat. We all think we know who we are. We really don't. It's such a journey for self-actualization. We're so complex as human beings. It actually makes sense that maybe it takes a little while to find where you want to go. You find your niche, you find your passion, you find something you're good at or you're passionate about and you want to push forward with. So I really like that component of the conversation that didn't come back to this linear path of I had this, this, and this, and I can attest that I can find my spoken word and my poetry right back to when I was in grade two.
Yeah, and it parallels so much of our journey too. I think that you and I both are very much so late bloomers when it comes to finding our voice and finding our niche as well, and saying, you know, like, what are we good at? What can we do really well? We found this like recently, and I think that that's great. And something that I remember thinking as Dwayne was speaking during the interview was, wow, I really wish that I had an encounter with Dwayne when I was a middle school student. Like, I really wish that there was somebody who could speak to us the way that he speaks to students now about their experiences, because he truly does understand students and what they are going through. In particular, when Dwayne was speaking about the immigrant experience and the different things that immigrant families experience when they're here, when they first emigrate to a place, a big metropolis like Toronto is, what are some of their experiences? What do they go through? And how can they connect with one another and with the things that Dwayne was talking about? And I found myself actually feeling like I was a middle school student. And, you know, some of the things that I was feeling and experiencing at that time. And that was really strong for me, because that was a very interesting time. You know, all of my friends were also in the same situation, the same boat, and we found ourselves to be a little bit outside of the norm, outside of what we expected students to be experiencing at that time. And so it was lovely to have that shared experience to talk about some of those things that we had felt when we were middle school students, and to hear him talk about that now, that was really a little bit nostalgic and you know, brought up some of those feelings from so many years ago as well. So that was just something that I connected to on a more personal level through the conversation.
It reminds me of another quote that if you ever talk to someone and you find them boring, because you're boring.
Because you're boring.
Because you're not listening.
Yeah, that's right.
And Dwayne was not boring by any means, but as you were talking about that, it reminded me of the power of really listening to folks. Mm-hmm. And Dwayne does have an amazing story, but it's also a reminder that everyone has an amazing story if you will take the time to listen intently. And I love that quote. If something's boring, it's because you are boring and you're not investing the time in the folks around you. And I think Spoken word and storytelling and poetry is a great way to hear folks' stories. And so it's just a good reminder, Pav, you talk about to listen, to really actively listen and to reassess yourself if you don't see value in what folks are sharing with you. Time for swag bag?
I think so.
All right, let's push the button on this. I found it.
Hey, oh, there you go.
You thought I wouldn't.
There
All
is.
Right. The swag bag on this magnificent episode is to go back to about the 20-minute mark when the interview starts.
Yeah.
And replay it.
Yes. All 40 minutes of it.
If you want, you can even go back to the beginning and replay it there too.
Yeah.
But the swag bag is definitely go back to that 20-minute mark and replay that part and connect with Dwayne Morgan. And it's not for us to direct you there. You're probably already connected with Dwayne Morgan if you're connected with us. But if you love that poetry, access to poetry, spoken word on so many different topics. So I want to say genres within spoken word. That was sort of the word that popped in mind. Find Dwayne Morgan. You can't miss him. His Wikipedia page will take you 16 weeks to go through.
Yes.
But invest the time.
I cannot believe how much stuff he has done in his career. I mean, it's everything. It's from poetry to spoken word to music to filmmaking as well. I mean, there's so much there that you can't tire of his content. It's all over the place and it's all phenomenal. So please do check out Dwayne Morgan. His connections, his links are all in our show notes. So please check those out and connect with him as soon as you can.
All right, folks, we appreciate you joining us on the Chan Pav Show. Teachers Talking Teaching, episode 111, soon to be followed by 112.
Yes.
Rate, review, subscribe, send a carrier pigeon with our podcast, or tell a friend. Mm-hmm. But of course, you could also rate, review, and subscribe. I guess you can't subscribe. You could rate and review The Magnificent Microphone on Amazon.
Yes,
but our podcast on Apple Podcasts. And we would love that great support. And of course, all our new friends in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, be on the lookout because we'll be calling on a few of you for some interviews to wrap up some of those great sessions that you are delivering there in Saskatoon. That as much as we talked about hours at the beginning, that conference was packed with tons of great conferences, and we know we want to reach out to many of the folks that we met there or saw there and say, let's have you on the Chan Pav Show talking, you know,
teaching.
Absolutely.
Thank you everybody for joining us for episode 111. We'll see you next time.
Because you're my first, my last, my everything.